This podcast is brought to you by ThrottleNet. ThrottleNet can provide world-class managed IT services and IT support to your business. They're St. Louis's highest-rated outsourced IT company, and there's many different ways ThrottleNet can help with your business's operation and digital protection. Check them out at ThrottleNet.com.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewsTalkSTL.com.
Good afternoon, good evening, wherever you might be. Welcome to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL, 4:06 in the PM here on a Friday. It's a Friday. It's May the 19th, 2023. Welcome to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. Just me, myself, and Irene. And Quentin. Quentin's here as well. How you doing, Quentin?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
It's great to have you here, man.
Yeah, appreciate it.
This reminds me of the old Tim Jones show that I used to do back at a different station on Sunday nights when Ken Williams and I, producer Ken.
No way.
Back in the day, it was a Jeff Allen creation. He said, I was doing another job almost full time. I was doing it full time, but I was subbing and helping out at a different station that most people probably know where I was with Jeff. And, he at one point said, how about the Tim Jones show? And I said, who's going to do that? You know, so that's the joke. So we launched that. Oh my goodness. That's been like 6-7 years ago now on a Sunday night. And Ken Williams was my executive producer.
No way.
So it was Ken and I in a room on a Sunday evening. And we always wondered if there was, you know, anybody listening. Okay. And we found out that a ton of people were listening because it was from 7 to 9. And so people are driving home from grandma's house or from dinner or whatever. They're getting ready for the week ahead. And Jeff always explained to me, and that's why we have a huge Sunday night lineup here on our station. Jeff always explained to me, you know, people by Sunday evening, they're starting to think about the week, and you transition them into, ooh, got to careful how I use that word these days. You transition them into the week ahead with like what the heck's been going on over the weekend and what's going to be teed up on Monday morning. So yeah, so it was just me. And this is kind of weird because like usually there's like a whole cavalcade of people in here, Chris and Katie and the gang, and just you and I today. But we got a lot of guests and we're going to have a lot of fun together, and we're going to talk about a lot of different things from the politicization of the IRS and the FBI. We learned all that this week, to what's been going on at the Supreme Court. We're going to talk to Zach Smith at 4:25 about many of those legal eagle issues, the border crisis, the Durham report. We have a lot to catch up with about that happened in the legal world with Zach Smith. There was a couple big Supreme Court cases that came down yesterday on big tech. At 4:43-ish, let's say 4:45, we're going to talk to a new guest about insurance. Now, don't fall asleep. Don't turn the dial. This is important stuff because we're going to talk about things for small businesses. And I know we have a ton of small business owners in our audience. And there is a tool out there that can help small businesses when traditional insurance is not. In fact, you know what? I got that question last night. I had saw many of you last night at an event for state senators Eigel and Schroer. It was a 1776 PAC event. It's a super PAC that I help run with Chad Hansen and Rick Pogue. Those names you hear a lot here on a radio station. Yes, we're all part of the vast right-wing conspiracy. And there was a young lady who asked that very question. She said, what can the legislature do, or what can the government do to help all the small business owners maybe get into a pool or a play? I should have remembered we were going to have Van Carlson on this afternoon to talk about these plans. So I think that's very interesting stuff. We're always saying, you know, what can we do for small businesses? 4:45 today, we're going to talk about small businesses and insurance. One of the biggest expenses that small business owners have. I know that because I was a small business owner. I've worked for small businesses. I've owned small businesses. My father was a small business owner as a veterinarian, so I'm very familiar. At 5 o'clock, 5:07, we're going to do the speaker's stump speech. I'm going to talk about the importance of family. Family first. I thought I'd lighten it up a little bit. Not lighten it up. I thought I would, maybe soften it up a little bit for the weekend. And Patrick Ishmael, Director of Government Accountability. Look, this will be, I'm not going to say this is the final postmortem on the legislative session that really wasn't this last term, but it'll be one of the major ones, because now I think we need to turn the page and figure out how to do better, because our legislature did not do well with a supermajority of Republicans running around very few important pieces of legislation made it across the finish line. Lots of swamp sludge, as former Missouri State Senator Dr. Bob Onder calls it. Lots of stuff for the lobbyists, not a lot of stuff for the peoples. So that's where we are. Quentin, I've been thinking about you today as I've been rolling down here, because I knew you were going to be here. Katie's out today. Chris is out today. They're not vacationing together, as far as I know, but if they are, hope they're having a good time. No, I think Chris is with the beautiful Becky Arps in Myrtle Beach, and I don't honestly know where Katie is. Is she like witness protection program today or something?
I haven't heard anything.
She didn't say.
No.
This must be high level.
I'm with the kiddos probably.
Maybe, yes. I hope she is having a good time with Maeve and everybody in Fitzpatrick land. So I've been meaning to ask you, Quint, how long have you been with Larry Connors? Have you been working with him a long time?
Yes. Timing could be a little wrong, but approximately 3 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. So you and Larry are besties at this point.
Yeah, at this point.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I always want to call him Mr. Connors, because like, I'm not trying to date Larry, but I grew up watching Larry on TV here in St. Louis. So it's one of those guys you always saw. And when you know, back in the day, Quentin, because I'm a little bit older than you, back in the day, there wasn't a lot of choices, right? Mm-hmm. So there was only 3 or 4 channels, and those people were like, they were like idolized. You know, it's like, that's all, those were the people on TV. Those 3 or 4 people that did the evening news on each of the channels. Larry was one of those guys. And so it was like, when I learned that Larry Connors was going to come here and be with us on Newstalk STL, I was like, oh, that's the most fantastic thing in the world. And he's such a super guy. So,
no, he is.
Great.
He's an amazing guy to work with. I actually hear the stories all the time, especially with him being on The Arch, or, you know, Larry, can you do can you do that one saying right before your MASH or whatever it was that he said?
We've got two legends here, and they're probably hating me right now because I'm making them sound old. But we've got two living legends, and they should take that as a badge of honor. Vic Porcelli and Larry Connors. We're very blessed. We've got lots of I'll call it wisdom. We got lots of wisdom, and we of course have us. I'm kind of in the middle of the bunch, and then we got the younger folks with you and Joey and Katie. Tony's kind of in that middle in section as well. So we have diversity.
That's here the at perfect the combination.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. So this is, before we get into some of the more serious topics, and I know it's Friday, so I won't overwhelm you too much with too much bad news, because it seems like that's all the news we have these days, with Joe Biden as the president of the United States. He's in Japan, so hopefully he hasn't destroyed that island nation, as bad as the carnage that he's wrecked here on the homeland. He'll be stumbling and bumbling home apparently this weekend. They did call off the debt ceiling talks. That's not good. On the other hand, it shows that Republicans are sticking by their resolve. So I'll bring you up to speed on that. But it's also a huge sports weekend, in case anybody is into that sort of thing. You, of course, are going to have lots of baseball, because we're smack dab in the middle of the first half of the season. We're going to have lots of hockey, because there's lots of the hockey playoffs are in full swing. They're down to the final four in hockey. And there's a huge golf tournament going on up in Rochester, New York. The PGA Championship is going on up in Rochester. And Quentin, you tell me, are you an NBA guy?
I watch the NBA.
Okay. Are they still in the playoffs? Oh, I've lost track.
Yes.
Okay.
NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs will always be at the same exact time.
Okay.
They're in the same series.
Okay. Finals. Very good. So what's your sport du jour? Like, what's your go-to if you're going to watch sports?
Football.
Football.
I play football. I was raised in football. It's my life right
now. So you're kind of in limbo right now this time of year, right? Because there's not much football going on.
Well, I mean, I'm addicted to competition.
Okay.
So basketball, hockey, golf.
I'll watch whatever.
I'll watch everything.
Sure. Do you know a fellow by the name, are you familiar with Bryson DeChambeau on the PGA Tour?
Yes.
So I did not know what happened to him, and it's all good now, but apparently, even though my recollection of his last few years was that he was crushing it on the tour and winning lots of tournaments and making millions of dollars, he was also doing it in this really like bulked up fashion. He was on this 5,000 calorie a day diet.
I remember hearing something about
and
that.
He just became like a Hulk, and he almost looked cartoonish, you know? And it was like watching not even Popeye. It was like watching Brutus, you know, swing a golf club. It looked like he was holding a toothpick. And he apparently was having a lot of digestive issues, and he learned that he was allergic to a whole bunch of stuff, including like the glutens and like the over carbo loading and all that. So he got rid of that ridiculous 5,000 calorie a day diet, like cut it in like more than half, and then like immediately lost a ton of weight. So he just shed like 45 pounds. I found an article popped up on my stream today, and he looks like a different person. Like, he was not recognizable. He looks good. He looks like really, he looks really fit and slim and trender, and he looks like a piece of steel. And apparently he says he's had an attitude adjustment as well, because he was known on the tour as kind of one of these guys that not as bad as, what's his face? Patrick Reed, who has a really bad reputation. But Bryson was known as just a little bit of an egomaniac, you know? And all those guys have got to have a little bit of ego, right? Because they're like the best golfers in the world. So apparently he's like a new kind of person. So, you know, you don't see much of him or Dustin because they're on that LIV tour, which is hard to find.
Exactly. You know? I saw their first tournament just this past weekend, last weekend on Channel 5.
What'd you think of it?
I didn't watch it because it was going on at the same time as the PGA Tour.
Okay.
And I'm a big NASCAR guy, too. The NASCAR was on.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yes, sir.
All right. Very good. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to watching the rest of the PGA Championship this weekend. The Cardinals had a big, the Cardinals, I counted up the runs this morning over their last Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Over the last five games, the Cardinals have scored almost 50 runs. They had two games where they've scored more than 15 runs this week. So they played the first half of the season like the worst team in baseball, the first half of the first half. And then, you know, they had a horrible April. They started off May really bad. And now they've won the series. The last three series as they played in, they've been in a positive territory. So, I don't know. They seem to be a very schizophrenic team this year, and we'll see what happens. But you know what? They got Wainwright back.
Yes.
They may have fixed their catcher situation. Yes. So, with baseball, or now are you originally a St. Louis guy, or you have different loyalties?
Yeah, my whole family's from the D.C. area, so in every sport, I'm a D.C. sports fan.
I respect that. You know, you got to cheer from where you came, you know?
Something like that. I mean, I was born and raised out here, but I came out the womb with a Washington bib on.
Uh-huh.
I didn't want to say the last name. I guess Commanders now, right?
So, what did you think about? I don't know anything. All I heard was they got sold.
Yes.
Was that good for them?
Yes.
Okay, because the owner is crazy or something?
Oh, my goodness. He doesn't know football. He's a great businessman. Great business guy. Knows how to manage money with the best of them.
What's his name?
Dan Snyder.
Dan Snyder. So Dan Snyder sold the team to who?
Josh Harris. The Josh Harris group that includes Magic Johnson in it.
Oh.
Yes.
Probably know a little bit more about sports.
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
A little.
All right. Well, Magic Johnson's had an amazing life. After everything he went through in the 90s when I was in college, when all that news broke about his health situation. And a lot of us were like, oh, well, Magic, we'll be remembering Magic Johnson soon. And he's still going strong, you know? And he's a hell of a business guy. Yeah. All right. So I want to tell you about some of these headlines of the day here. So in case you've been working and busy. And after our break here, we're going to come back and talk to Zach Smith, our legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. So one of the big stories today was that Jake Sullivan served on a national security board with Hunter Biden for 2 years. So the palace intrigue getting a little deeper up at the White House. Republicans, as I mentioned, I do want to bring you this story because I read this at length earlier today. And I want to give you some of the details on it. Okay. So Republicans walk out of debt ceiling talks, say that the White House is not being reasonable. That's the headline. All right. What are the details? Well, for the last few days, folks, just so you know, the White House and the U.S. House have been in some pretty serious negotiations. And as Chris mentioned yesterday, Kevin McCarthy had another victory in the battle, not the war, but he had a victory in the battle where he got all the negotiations pared down to just like the top senior level staffers at the White House and the Speaker's office. And that was about it. So that was good because you get more people in the room talking about a $6 trillion budget plan, then you're going to have too many hands in the cookie jar and too many people saying, oh, no, we can't cut that, or, oh, no, we have to have that. So the less people you have, you hopefully boil down the issues to less items in contention. And so that's apparently what they were doing. There was apparently a couple of congressmen in these talks, Representative McCarthy, and a couple of high-level negotiators from the White House. So here's what happened. Until this is a quote from one of the negotiators for the House, Congressman Garrett Graves of Louisiana. Until people are willing to have reasonable conversations about how you can actually move forward and do the right thing, then we're not going to sit here and talk to ourselves. We decided to press pause. So that's the big headline you're seeing, that the negotiations have hit the pause button because it's not productive, Congressman Graves continued. He then said he did not know if talks would resume this weekend. So as I mentioned, Biden's coming back on Sunday. I could see, well, we'll see how badly jet-lagged Joe Biden, 80-year-old Joe Biden is, but he may come back this Sunday and maybe get things back going. That's why, in case you were looking at your 401k or the financial markets, that the markets dipped quite a bit. And, yep, they finished 109 points down for the Dow, 30 points down for the NASDAQ. So the markets were getting kind of excited over the last few days because these negotiations were happening, but they've hit pause. And one of the toughest sticking points apparently is the question of spending caps. Joe Biden simply wants an extension of the credit limit, keep racking up the credit card as we approach $32 trillion in debt, and do nothing about the massive amount of spending instead. So that's one of the biggest headlines of the day. Sorry to give you the bad news ahead of the weekend, but maybe hope springs eternal, and they'll get back to it on Sunday evening, Monday morning. All right, as we mentioned, we've got two awesome guests coming up this hour. Zach Smith, legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, will talk about the border crisis. We'll talk about these huge Supreme Court decisions that came out regarding Google and big tech and the Durham investigation. He's next on the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show, 101.9/94.1 News Talk, STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
I believe our departures from case management rules established in the FBI's domestic investigations and operations guide could have undermined potentially righteous prosecutions and may have been part of an effort to inflate the FBI's statistics on domestic extremism.
Zach Smith, legal fellow with the Heritage Foundation.
You know, I ask you a lot of predictions. Can you predict what the Supreme Court probably will do with this action?
Screeching in here every Friday afternoon, as he always does, landing here in the heartland. Zach Smith, our resident legal, joining us once again. Zach, good afternoon to you. Thanks for being with us today. Oh, is he there?
He is on.
Zach, are you there?
I have him on here.
Might want to check that again. Oh, are you there, Zach? There he is.
I am. I can hear you guys now.
Yeah, I bet you had a lot of great comments about your intro, as you do every week. So we're glad to have you back here, Zach.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me back. Glad to, I think, as you say, Tim, screech in on a Friday afternoon.
That's right. That's right. So, Zach, I'm not sure what I did, but neither Chris nor Katie are here today. So I'm not sure what happened, but no, they're actually both out. But we've got producer Quentin in here today, who I know you know as well, Zach. And so you and I will have a fantastic conversation like we always do. Zach, I would love to start with the hearings that we saw. And Zach, you know, it's a shame. I hope that it's a shame if all Americans don't see that hearing and take it at face value, Zach, the FBI whistleblower hearing. So Zach, you know what? Before I start asking you specific questions about it, would love just kind of your 35,000 foot about what you thought of four FBI whistleblowers coming forward who are servants of this country, many of whom have served in multiple different ways as decorated combat veterans and so on and so forth, saying that one of our most prized and honored institutions may very well be broken and rotten to the core.
I mean, it's very troubling. I think anyone who cares about our country, anyone who cares about the rule of law, who listened to any portion of those hearings last week, came away deeply disturbed, particularly with the allegations of retaliation and reprisal that many of these whistleblowers laid out in very painful, very excruciating detail. And when you couple what was said at those hearings last week with the information that came out in the Durham report that was released earlier in the week, well, it paints a very stark, very startling picture of not only where we are at as a country, but more importantly, where it seems like many of our, like you said, most prized law enforcement agencies have really gone astray and are using their powers not for good, but for their own selfish reasons.
Zach, you know, one wrinkle that's come out of these hearings that I am very confused about, and, you know, maybe the law is different in different jurisdictions at the federal level. And, Zach, the firm that I used to work for, I dabbled in some employment law. One of my best friends, one of my former partners, she was like an expert in that area. And so maybe I need to get her on at some point. But I thought I'd ask you, because I bet you have some insight on this. The FBI is declaring that these people aren't whistleblowers. That's not their jurisdiction to make that declaration, is it?
Well, generally, I mean, they can make it, but it doesn't really matter.
Right. doesn't change reality, right, Zach?
No, I mean, look, it makes it more difficult, I think, for many of these individuals. They're going to have to go through some additional hardships. You know, while litigation is ongoing, but that's ultimately a determination that a court is going to make.
That's what I thought.
And if you look at not only the guidance from the EEOC and the other EO agencies that come out regarding this, whistleblower protections are very, very broad. And I'll give you an example, Tim. You know, they have been expanded so much in recent years that if you report wrongdoing to your boss, who is one of the alleged wrongdoers, that qualifies you for whistleblower protection, mm-hmm. broadly speaking. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't take much to trigger a whistleblower protections. And so the FBI's position is somewhat, you know, perplexing. But at the end of the day, all I think it does is ultimately make it easier, likely easier, for these individuals to win their lawsuits.
And Zach, isn't the, you know, there was a lot of detail and there were a lot of situations that were described by each one of these whistleblowers. But long story short, Zach, you know, many of us have said, look, you know, the rank and file, the people who entered the FBI or the CIA or the Department of Justice, you know, they're by and large, they're likely all very altruistic and just wanting to serve their country. The problem becomes, Zach, that when the brass, when the political appointees, when the bosses start inserting all this political bias, it's kind of hard to buck what your supervisors, your managers, and your directors are saying. So, Zach, that's the problem, in that when the whole institution starts having this attitude, even if you have the best of intentions, you may feel like you have to do your job a certain way. And the FBI is not supposed to pick and choose which American's political philosophy it wants to side with, right?
No, absolutely not. If there's one institution we don't want doing that, it's the Justice Department, the FBI. They're supposed to be apolitical enforcers of the law, going wherever, you know, the facts of a case and the law lead them in each individual instance. But your point about the line agents, the line men and women who are serving, you know, kind of the ground level roles in the FBI, I think that's right. You know, I was in AUSA, a federal prosecutor, for several years. I've worked with FBI agents, DEA agents, ATF agents, you know, many other federal law enforcement officials. And by and large, they were good people. They wanted to do the right thing. They were proud to serve their country, and they wanted to get justice for people who had been wronged. But you're right as well, Tim, that, you know, what we are learning at these hearings, particularly what came out in the Durham report this past week, is that there was a politicized upper echelon of the FBI that not only broke their own protocols and procedures, but they ignored evidence that kind of went against the narrative they wanted to spin, that went against, you know, kind of the investigatory steps they wanted to take. And it really painted, again, a very troubling picture of the FBI, where it's at today as an institution. And so I think part of what's going to happen from this, I hope, mm-hmm, is as mm-hmm. we kick off a larger conversation about what may be some needed reforms at the FBI.
Speaking, folks, to Zach Smith, legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. You can find Zach online on Twitter at TZ Smith. That's, he's on Twitter there. You can also check him out at heritage.org. Zach, miscarriages of justice are unfortunately not just limited to Washington, D.C. We've been watching a miscarriage of justice over the last 5+ years here in the city of St. Louis. And Zach, you even wrote a book that involved this problem here in St. Louis, because it's a widespread right. problem across the country. You and your colleague, Cully Stimson, wrote all about rogue prosecutors. Zach, Kim Gardner just made two great decisions. If she didn't make them in her career, she made them recently. She decided to resign, and then she decided to resign earlier. Maybe the only two good decisions that Kim Gardner made in her career, right, Zach?
Well, let's be clear, Tim. These weren't altruistic decisions because there was an action against her to remove her from office and to continue moving forward that if she didn't resign sooner than she said she was going to initially. So I'm very glad she did that, but these were more self-preservation type decisions than anything else. But you're right. Cully and I, we wrote about this radical rogue prosecutor movement. You can pre-order our book on Amazon right now. It's called Rogue Prosecutors, How Radical Soros Lawyers Are Destroying America's Communities. But not only has Kim Gardner decided to step down from office, so is Kim Fox in Chicago. She's not running for re-election. And the big news this past week on the rogue prosecutor front was what happened in Boston with Rachel Rollins, the rogue U.S. attorney there in the state of Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. Rachel Rollins, she was the local rogue prosecutor in Boston. She had a list of 15 crimes you could commit. She went and prosecuted you for a very radical, very temperamentally unfit individual to be a local elected prosecutor. So what did Joe Biden do? Well, he rewarded her and nominated her to be the U.S. attorney for Massachusetts. But her record was so bad, her decision so controversial, that she actually, her nomination split 50-50 of the U.S. Senate, and Kamala Harris had to cast a tie-breaking vote to confirm her. Well, this past week, she resigned, and we found out a day later why. Because the Office of Inspector General, the Office of Special Counsel, which investigates certain violations by political appointees in the federal government, they released two very troubling reports about her conduct. They showed numerous instances where she'd used her office for her own personal gain, where she'd leaked confidential investigatory information to local reporters to try to harm a political opponent. She accepted gifts she should not have accepted. And in fact, she even lied to Office of Inspector General investigators, which of course is itself a criminal violation. And so they actually referred the sitting U.S. attorney for federal criminal prosecution, which of course Merrick Garland's Justice Department inexplicably declined to move forward with. But it just shows, you know, not only are the ideologies these individuals are pushing dangerous, but many of them are just temperamentally unfit to hold the office and the awesome power that prosecutors wield. And again, if anyone's interested, we have entire chapters in our book devoted to Kim Gardner, an entire chapter to Rachel Rollins. So you can really take a deep dive and see all of the horror show type incidents that happened on their watches.
Zach, I'm sure that when you and Cully published the book, unveiled the book, Rogue Prosecutors, How Radical Soros Lawyers Are Destroying America's Communities, I'm sure you got all sorts of blowback and pushback from the left. But Zach, I know you don't take any satisfaction in this, but you can now say, we told you so. We were right. I mean, there was nothing sensational about the title or the chapters or the details. This is what happens when leftist Soros-funded prosecutors put their defund the police narrative into actual reality and actual action. Communities are destroyed. Right, Zach?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And no, it doesn't give either Cully or I any satisfaction to say that we were right, but of course we were, because it's just common sense. You know, if you stop arresting criminals, if you stop prosecuting them, of course that's going to give them a green light to go out and engage in even more egregious, even more dangerous conduct. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, you know, go figure, Tim, if you publish, like Rachel Rollins did, a list of 15 crimes you can commit, guess which crimes are suddenly going to go through the roof. You know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this stuff out.
It does not at all. Zach, let's switch gears a little bit. Big Supreme Court decision came down, I think, yesterday. The Washington Post, Zach, had an interesting headline on this. Supreme Court ruling in Twitter and Google cases puts Congress in a bind. Zach, could you explain to our audience what the Supreme Court ruled in those cases? And why do you think, I don't know if you agree with the headline or not, but why do you think the Washington Post thinks Congress is now in a bind because of the Supreme Court hearing?
Well, I know this is going to shock you, Tim. I don't agree with the Washington Post. And in fact, I think I would be more concerned if I did agree with the Washington Post.
Hear, hear.
But look, you know, these cases, this Twitter and Google case, they were broadly teed up on a couple of different issues, but many people thought this may be a good, two good vehicles, two good cases for the court to address the ongoing controversy surrounding Section 230. You know, kind of the the provision in federal law that allows internet content providers not to be held liable for content they simply allow to be reposted or they republish themselves. The court punted on that decision, though. They didn't really make any ruling regarding Section 230 and decided both of those cases on much narrower grounds because these cases involve terrorism, terrorist-related incidents. There were some other statutory provisions at play, too. And so the court essentially resolved them on those narrower grounds. So I haven't read the Washington Post article, but I suspect, based on the title, what they're saying now is that Congress will actually have to do their jobs and make a decision about Section 230, whether that should stay in place, whether it should be modified, and if so, how it should be modified. And I don't think that's a bad thing. That's what Congress is supposed to do. It shouldn't leave it to the Supreme Court or any court to essentially do their dirty work for them and allow our elected representatives to avoid accountability. Unfortunately, that's something that's happened too often in recent years, not only with the court, but also with the administrative agencies. I know we've talked about the problems that the current administrative state has caused on so many fronts. But, you know, this was an interesting decision. It was a very narrow decision, but it certainly does leave the ball in Congress's court,
Zach,
to decide what to do.
Zach, before we let you go, and don't want you to give the whole episode away, but the title of the latest SCOTUS 101 podcast caught my attention. Tell folks why they should listen to Judicial SaaS at SCOTUS 101.
Well, I will give Giancarlo credit for coming up with that title. I think that was more, he was needling me about the trivia this week where we talked about some sassy judicial opinions. But it's also very fitting because Justice Elena Kagan this week got in kind of a spat with her ordinarily ideological ally, Justice Sonia Sotomayor. She took kind of a pointed shot at her in one of the decisions involving the Andy Warhol Foundation, whether a photograph of Prince constituted fair use or not. But it was very pointed, very strong language in any Supreme Court opinion, but particularly when it looked to be crossfire between what would ordinarily be ideological allies, Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan. Mm. So I hope everyone will listen. Check it out. You can find the episode. It's posted on my Twitter, at TV Smith, or you can find it at heritage.org under SCOTUS 101.
Fantastic. At TZ Smith, heritage.org, at SCOTUS 101. Zach, we'll look forward to speaking with you again next week. Have a great weekend, my friend. Thanks so much.
You bet. Good job falling down the fourth. Take care.
Yep, we'll continue to do so indeedy. All right, that's Zach Smith there. When we return, as promised, we're going to talk to all you small business owners about something that could end up saving your small business. That's dealing with the high cost and premiums of insurance. Oh, such a big topic. Such a tedious topic, but such an important topic. We'll talk to Van Carlson, the founder and CEO at SRA, at 8:31, next on the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show at 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
It's clear to all of us by now that climate change is a major threat to security and prosperity everywhere. Now, stories of climate disaster have always been on humanity's mind in some fashion, dating back to ancient legends and scriptural traditions in nearly every faith, telling of floods, fires, and other calamities. But the climate challenge in front of us is not some prophecy of cosmic doom. It is a specific set of problems.
You know, none of us have any idea what Pete Buttigieg is ever talking about, and just so you guys know, neither does he. I don't think he does either. I think it's a fancier word salad than Kamala Harris. You know, Kamala Harris has kind of got the standard word salad. Pete Buttigieg, like, puts the Kalamata olives on it, you know, and the fancier dressing. I don't know. Hey, welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show here at 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL. It's nearly, yep, now it is 4:48 in the PM. Let's get to our next guest. I've been telling you about the fact that there are tools out there and there are people out there who actually want to help small businesses. We're going to talk to one of those now, Van Carlson, founder and CEO at SRA 831B Admin, and he joins us now on the program. Good afternoon, Van. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for letting me come on your show, Tim.
Absolutely. So, you know, Van, it's really funny. I'm not just saying this. I'm not making this up. I was at an event last night. I'm a former legislator, and so I help a lot of our current legislators out with fundraising and events and all kinds of things. And we were at an event last night, and we had a woman in the audience who raised her hand and asked two of our state senators, "What can the government do to help us small business owners when it comes to insurance?" And Van, I needed you there with me last night. So this is a big question, right, Van? Because just Van, if you could remind people, we forget, we hear about all the big box people every day. The United States of America, the backbone, the engine, are small business owners, right?
Absolutely. Life, the blood of the body. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And so it's very important that they know that they're not alone, and there are tools out there to help them with the very complicated, expensive needs they have. Insurance is one of them, right?
Yeah. You know, we work with a code, 831B tax code, and it was introduced in 1986 for the very reasons clients or business owners are experiencing today, and that's high rates are going up and exclusions are coming in. So the client, business owners are paying more for higher expensive policies with less coverage.
Mm. So this has been around, this opportunity, this statute by which these products can be created has been around since 1986.
Yeah, the Indian Reform Act, Tip O'Neill, Ronald Reagan, right? It was introduced because what was happening, traditional insurance carriers were either canceling people because they either had a claim, or the rates between 1983 to 1986, general liability premiums increased 249%. So that was a big impact, not on big businesses necessarily. They were already self-insuring their stuff. It was the small to middle market business owners that were feeling it, because you got to pass that expense on to the consumers. But, you know, if you're going to compete with big box stores, those guys aren't feeling those kind of pinches. Mm-hmm. And that code, really, the 831B tax code was really adopted by the Fortune 500 companies first. You can put up to $1.2 million into this program, into an 831B, expense it in your operating company, put it into an 831B, and it just sits there and rises. Meaning that it's like a 401k at that point. It's staying, you expensed it, and now staying deferred. And now you're building up a surplus of a reinsurance, you know, no different than any traditional insurance companies operate under, right? The tax advantages insurance companies have are immense. And of course, Fortune 500 companies are the first ones to adopt it. You know, we've been out here slugging since 2008. With our program, and we, you know, I recognize the financial risk business owners took during the great, I guess they are calling it the Great Recession. And you know, so that's why I came into this. Up until then, I was a traditional risk manager. I helped business owners with traditional insurances, but I saw a lot of gaps in traditional insurances. Now speed forward to 2020, we got COVID-19, and what we're telling business owners today is everybody should have their own PPP program, but it needs to be self-funded. This idea, what we did in 2020, is we don't still understand the consequences for it. We have bank failures, I would argue, because of all the free money we gave out in 2020.
Oh,
because
absolutely.
Of what we had to do with the leveraging of the high interest, you know, had to take rate increases in order to offset inflation. Why? Because we gave out a bunch of free money.
Mm-hmm.
Business owners, the bootstrappers, the entrepreneurs, and so forth, they need to be told about these codes. Again, you know, we're talking Fortune 500 fleets of attorneys, good tax planning CPAs they have exposure to. And right now, you know, we're trying to get the word out on this code, because a lot of our business clients were leading up into this in 2020 had their own 831B plans in place, and they weathered the storm far better than clients. And who wants to rely on the government the next time to bail you or keep your business afloat?
So, Van, who creates these plans? How do people find them? Where do people find them?
Well, we own the domain 831B.com, and I would tell you to start there first. And you're exactly right. You got to get educated on this. This is one of those work on your business kind of thing, not in your business. So, but it's all over. There's 34 states promoting you to own an 831B in their state. When I first started, there was only 8. Now there's 34. I mean, they're all doing it for premium taxes and all that kind of stuff. But an 831B plan, all that is the electing under that code So the premiums you're putting into it, because this box that we're talking, that it has to look and feel like an 831B, or excuse me, like an insurance company. And then you collect under an 831B, so all the premiums leading into it. Now, when the PATH Act came out in 2017, the Congress is one of the parties, it was being abused for estate tax planning, unfortunately. And that's really some of the things that brought the pressure from the IRS on it. You know, my world, get me once, don't get me twice. And we had some really smart attorneys go out there and figure a way to do something differently with a code than what it was originally designed for. Shocker, I know. But nevertheless, that's what happened. But now that that's all been cleaned up due to the PATH Act, and we are able to increase it. Before it was 1.2 million. Now you can do 2.2 million and there's a CPI rider. So now this year, for example, if you qualify, and I mean qualify, there's rules and regulations, no different than the 401k rules and regulations, right?
Yes.
You can put up to $2.6 million a year into these things.
Okay. So Van, when you just said 401k, and I just jumped on your website, by the way, folks, great, great website, really easy to understand, really easy to navigate, 831b.com. When you just said it's very similar to a 401k where, you know, employers set aside tax deferred dollars for retirement, the 831b is setting aside tax deferred dollars for insurance purposes. So that made the light bulb go off on above my head.
Yeah, and here's the other thing too about that. There's a ton of things insurance companies don't cover. A great example again is COVID-19. If you have an indirect loss, and this keeps going on, right? I mean, look at East Palestine. When those trains are derailment, right? They were shut down for how many days? Well, you know, the rent didn't stop. Mm-hmm. The employees still wanted to get paid. Mm-hmm. It didn't trip business interruption because it didn't happen on your property. My building didn't catch on fire, so I don't trigger business interruption. But if I'm forced to shut down because I'm just deemed to be a non-essential business, there's no triggering event for insurance to cover that. And that's just the beginning of this conversation. When you talk about cyber, supply chain risk, brand protection today, I mean, it takes years, if not decades, to build your reputation in the community, but it can take literally seconds to destroy it, whether it was true or not, whether it was posted or it was whatever. Now you have to defend it. And now I call it a double negative. You got less people coming in through your front door, but your expenses are going up. Mm-hmm. Are you going to walk down to the bank and get an increase in your line of credit at that point? Mm-hmm. And so these are rainy day funds that you could set aside for unplanned events. And I just... You know, unfortunately, the IRS has been hounding business owners over this because they see it as an abuse.
Why does that not surprise me? Anything, it seems, Van, that anything that's working well for small business owners, this current administration wants to interrupt it and hobble it and maybe even destroy it and take it away.
Yeah, and you know, it's frustrating for me. And then it's just, you know, going back to dealing with this whole, if tell us what you like, tell us what you don't like. And we're not going to argue. We'll just go again. We're adapters. We'll adopt to the game. I mean, you make the rules. We'll go play the game, and we'll play the damn game really well. The point there is, but when you try to exclude people from a legitimate tax law, that's where I have a problem with it. And that's really what they're through, intimidation, letters, and everything else. And then there's over 1,000 cases right now in court, in tax court. And they're cherry picking these bad fact cases, and then they're painting everybody with the same brush. And it's good.
Yeah, fantastic product, Van. We're less than a minute to go. This is a fascinating topic. You've given us a ton of information. If folks' ears have been pricked up on this, where should they go to check out more and to contact you?
You know, the 831b.com. I think there's a lot of videos, and they appreciate you getting on the website. That's a great start. And then this is an educational thing. And this is a tool in the tool chest. And for the right client, it's a great tool. But I'll also tell you this. Your competitors are already doing these types of tools.
Yep.
And
absolutely.
If you're not, you're putting yourself at a disadvantage in the marketplace.
Fantastic stuff indeed. Van Carlson, check out 831B, 831B.com. Thanks so much, Van. Great to talk to you. Thanks for what you're doing for small businesses.
Thank you. I appreciate your time very much.
Yeah, you have a great weekend. All right, Van Carlson. Very interesting stuff for small business owners. Hey, when we come back, the speaker's stump speech on putting family first. 101.9 941 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.